What happens when the unthinkable crashes into ordinary life? Andy Barber has spent 2 decades as first assistant district attorney in affluent Newton, Massachusetts, building a reputation as a skilled prosecutor while creating the perfect suburban life with his wife Lori and 14-year-old son Jacob. When Ben Rifkin, Jacob's classmate, is found stabbed to death in a nearby park, Andy naturally takes charge of the investigation. The community's carefully maintained bubble of safety ruptures, transforming coffee conversations into worried speculation about predators lurking in their midst. Standing before anxious parents at hastily organized meetings, Andy projects reassurance in his blue blazer and khakis, promising justice with the confidence of someone who secured countless convictions. What he doesn't realize is how quickly his worlds will collide. When an anonymous email directs him to Facebook posts accusing Jacob of murder, followed by the discovery of a knife hidden in Jacob's room, Andy faces an impossible choice. In seconds, he makes a decision that transforms him from officer of the court to potential accomplice. He wraps the knife in paper towels and dumps it in a restaurant dumpster miles away. "I'd always believed in the law as an instrument of truth," Andy reflects later, "but when it came to my son, I discovered truth was suddenly negotiable." How quickly our moral certainties crumble when those we love most stand accused. Andy is forcibly removed from the case, a professional humiliation paired with personal anguish. His former protege, Neil Logiutis, takes over, viewing Jacob's case as his career opportunity. Evidence accumulates: Jacob's fingerprint in Ben's blood, witnesses describing Jacob with a matching knife, and surveillance footage placing him in the park. Drawing on his prosecutorial experience, Andy fixates on Leonard Patz, a convicted pedophile living nearby, revealing more about Andy's denial than Patz's guilt. He's simply a father refusing to face an unbearable truth. The investigation reveals Ben had been bullying Jacob, providing a motive that Andy cannot process despite his experience with similar cases. When Jacob is charged with first-degree murder, their attorney warns, "Every flicker of emotion will be interpreted against you. Every family photo scrutinized. Every past incident weaponized." The Barbers watch as community support evaporates, former friends avoid them, and their home is repeatedly defaced with accusatory graffiti. Defense psychiatrist Dr. Elizabeth Vogel introduces the murder gene, a MAOA mutation linked to violent behavior. During therapy, Lori reveals concerns about Jacob's childhood rampages and emotional detachment that Andy had dismissed as normal boyhood behavior. "The human body is a machine," Dr. Vogel insists, challenging Andy's belief in free will. Andy must provide DNA samples from himself and his estranged father, a convicted murderer, forcing him to confront his genetic heritage after decades of distancing himself from Bloody Billy Barber. "The idea of a murder gene offends my legal sensibilities," Andy argues. "We don't punish people for what they might do." Yet this possibility affects the parents differently. Andy rejects genetic determinism, while Lori wonders if she missed warning signs in Jacob's childhood. The question of DNA versus choices becomes deeply personal, creating a rift in their marriage when they need unity most. The courtroom transforms into theater where competing narratives vie for the jury's belief. The prosecutor depicts Jacob as a privileged killer, while the defense portrays him as an innocent teen who merely found a body and panicked. As witnesses testify, the Barber's private life becomes public spectacle. Neighbors recall childhood incidents, school officials discuss behavioral concerns, and social media posts face scrutiny. Most damaging is former friend Derek's testimony about Jacob's temper, a similar knife, and Jacob's disturbing story detailing a murder resembling Ben's death. Andy watches the prosecution's case building, noting that humans are pattern-seeking, storytelling animals. They need a complete story more than abstract concepts like burden of proof. When he discovers Jacob's troubling online conversations about violence, something tears open inside him. Not doubt exactly, but a physical wound. Despite this, he destroys Jacob's iPod, eliminating evidence. How quickly professional ethics crumble when our children are threatened. Andy, once embodying legal integrity, now destroys evidence and lies under oath for parental love. As the trial deteriorates, the Barber family crumbles under pressure. During one desperate night, Jacob fantasizes about escaping to Argentina, with his parents briefly indulging this fantasy of a new identity. Later, in their darkened kitchen, Lori forces Andy to confront the unthinkable. What if he's guilty? When pressed about Jacob's innocence, Andy can only respond, "I think there are things a parent should never think about a child." This exchange captures their core dilemma. Can parental love survive the possibility of your child's guilt? The case collapses when Leonard Patz is found dead with a confession to Ben's murder. Andy suspects his estranged father orchestrated this through prison connections, creating a moral quagmire where his father may have killed someone to protect Jacob. "You took away his day in court," Andy confronts his father, who responds with a knowing laugh that pierces Andy's legal idealism. Faced with this impossible choice between justice and family, Andy chooses silence, becoming more like his father than he ever intended. After Jacob's trial, the family enters a strange limbo. Jacob adapts easily to homeschooling, revealing himself as a natural hermit. Andy remains on paid leave, his prosecutorial career effectively over. Lori appears most damaged, aging visibly and developing a constant vigilance, watching her family from an emotional distance as if preparing for another catastrophe. A Caribbean vacation offers temporary hope. At a secluded Jamaican resort, the change of scenery works like a reset button. Jacob meets a girl named Hope, Lori and Andy reconnect intimately, and the family establishes new rituals, sharing meals without the weight of silence. This brief return to normalcy shatters when Hope vanishes. Her body washes ashore 7 weeks later. Though Andy maintains it was likely an accidental drowning, the implication hangs heavy. Jacob may have claimed another victim, forcing both parents to confront their worst fears about their son. The novel's most profound question emerges in its final act. What is the ultimate price of unconditional love? For Andy, it means compromising ethics, lying under oath, and becoming complicit in obstruction. For Lori, the cost proves even higher. Grand jury testimony reveals Lori's devastating choice. Unable to live with uncertainty about Jacob's guilt and fearing future harm, she deliberately crashes their car, killing Jacob and injuring herself, both protecting others and ensuring consequences the justice system couldn't deliver. Andy testifies she loved Jacob too much to let him become a monster, refusing to condemn her response to their impossible situation. The novel concludes with Andy visiting Lori in a psychiatric hospital. Their conversation reveals their fundamental difference. Andy chose blind faith in his son's innocence, while Lori couldn't ignore her doubts. "I had to know," she tells him. "You chose not to." We can never truly know another person, even our own child. This fundamental unknowability makes true justice impossible.